Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins. Today, President Obama announced executive actions to reduce gun violence and deaths from guns in America. At the White House earlier today, the president outlined his plan to expand background checks on buyers.
Anybody in the business of selling firearms must get a license and conduct background checks or be subject to criminal prosecutions.
He said that would apply to gun show sales and online sales and help detect violent criminals who use trusts and other means to buy weapons. The president said that action is needed now without Congress, and he teared up when he discussed a number of American mass shootings in recent years, including in Newtown, Connecticut.
Our unalienable right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, those rights were stripped from college kids in Blacksburg and Santa Barbara. And from high schoolers at Columbine, and from first graders in Newtown. First graders. And from every family who never imagined that their loved one would be taken from our lives by a bullet from a gun. Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad.
We'll hear from two authorities on gun violence in just a few minutes. But first, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. He is in Washington today, and he was in the East Room at the White House watching the president announce the executive action today. I spoke with Mayor Walsh just a few moments ago and asked why the mayor of Boston, the capital of a state that has one of the lowest gun deaths in the U.S. per capita, was there.
We still have too many shootings in our city and our Commonwealth. You know, we had a 16-year low in homicides this year in the city of Boston, which were great police work, but we're also, our shootings are up a bit from last year. We took 800 guns off the street this year, 1,000 off the street last year, with the work of the men and women of the Boston Police Department. However, we still have more guns on the street. Being part of this conversation is important to continue to reduce the crime. Well, if we have one gun death a year, that's one too many.
So what did the president say that for you sounded like it would resonate most in Massachusetts and across the nation? And that's two very different things, as you know.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the president's requesting a background check for everyone that purchases guns and also requiring that gun dealers have licenses to deal guns. And the reason for that, a lot of those guns end up on our streets through second sales or through being stolen, or people straw purchasing guns, and those they become the street guns and the crime guns that we have. And this is one little step, and when I say little, it's a big step, but it's a small piece of the overall puzzle of trying to resolve the illegal guns in the streets of Boston and in urban America.
And how do you think it would affect the availability of guns here? Because that's something that you have tried to crack down on as well, and that guns getting into the wrong hands.
The availability for guns for gun owners, it doesn't crack down at all. It just requires they have a background check. And I'm talking legitimate gun owners. For people who buy these guns on the black market, certainly make it more difficult for people to purchase guns and get them into the streets. So I think it does two things. One, and many people who are gun owners now have gone through the background check, but not everyone has done that. And this would force all stores that sell guns would have to make sure that they do a background check, and this would require background for anyone, whether it's a business that sells guns that actually has a store or somebody online who runs an operation online.
What does it do for the private sale of guns?
It just legitimizes them in a lot of ways, and making sure that the people buying the guns can be responsible gun owners. I think that, you know, there's a fear here in this country of getting guns into the wrong hands, whether it's illegal activity in the streets or potential terrorists. And by having a background check, you're able to check to make sure the people who have these guns and who buy these guns have the right to own them, and they're legitimate.
One of the things that the president said was that he wants to make $500 million available to increase mental health services. That's beyond the services of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. How big a difference do you think that would make in a place like Boston?
Well, that makes a big difference. I mean, I think that the main focus the president was doing that is for the amount of suicides that are happening, people who are committing suicides with handguns and trying to get as many services to people that have mental illness that need it. That's one of the things he mentioned today.
Because suicides, he said, represent something like two-thirds of all deaths by guns?
Yeah, two-thirds of all shootings happen as suicides.
And is that a particular problem in Massachusetts? And do you think that this will make any kind of a dent in the number?
It's happened in Massachusetts. There's no question about it. It's happened in Boston. There's no question about it. But certainly, I mean, that's not unfortunately going to grab the headlines. What grabs the headlines is people that have guns and do mass shootings. And I think that when you look at the amount of homicides that happen in our country every year, non-suicides, it's about 12,000. That's many mass shootings when you think about it at the end of the day.
And it was one of those mass killings in Newtown, Connecticut that brought the president's emotions to the surface today. Since you were there...
It was pretty powerful. I mean, the president, the room was full of people who were survivors of loved ones who were killed, whether it was in a mass shooting or homicide. And it was pretty powerful to be in today.
Tell me what else made an impression on you since you were there in the room.
There was a father who introduced the president who lost his son in the Sandy Hook shooting. And he stood on that stage. You know, 3 years later, I was watching him and his emotion. You could see the emotion in his body and his face. And the sadness in his face of losing his son, and talked very passionately about it at the beginning. And I had a chance to meet Congresswoman Gabby Gifford, who was there as well today in the audience, and many other families who lost loved ones. Just being in the room, you could feel their sadness.
The former Congresswoman you're talking about, who was the victim of gun violence in the most severe way, almost lost her life, in fact. The fact is that at this point, of course, there's going to be pushback, as the president well knows and you well know. Speaker Paul Ryan said no matter what, this is a tweet that he sent out, no matter what President Obama says, his word does not trump the Second Amendment. National Rifle Association came out with a statement saying that the men and women of the NRA take a backseat to no one when it comes to keeping our communities safe. What's your response to that?
Well, first of all, to the speaker's comments, I would suggest that the president did not say anything about taking guns away from people. He reaffirmed the commitment to the Second Amendment, saying that people do have the right to bear arms. And what I would suggest that the congressman goes to a living room of a mother who lost a son or daughter to violence, or lost his son or daughter to an illegal gun. And as far as the NRA is concerned, I think, again, it's rhetoric that they're using their rhetoric to scare people, when, in fact, the president was very clear that he's not looking to take the rights of anybody away. And I think that that's enough said about those two comments.
In November, Mr. Mayor, you signed an ordinance that bans unmarked replica handguns in public spaces in Boston. Tell us why that's an important action, and tell us how the enforcement of that has been going.
Well, I mean, I think the replica guns, I mean, they're very similar to a real gun, with the exception of you know, they don't have the ability to shoot ammunition. And I think that, you know, there was a situation in Cleveland where the young boy who had been shot and killed, who had a replica gun that pointed at a police officer. And I think that anything we can do to prohibit young people from having guns, these replica guns that we're banning, for all intents and purposes, they look and feel like a real gun. And they have the same weight of a real gun. And I think that, you know, we're banning them in the city of Boston because we don't want a situation where we have a police officer who's confronting a situation like that, thinking that this is a real gun at them and take the life of somebody, when in fact that we could prevent that by banning these guns.
And what about the guns that get into hands through presumably legal means, but these things don't show up on registries? There was a Rappaport Institute study from last year that looked at handguns seized by police in Boston. It found that more than 60% of the guns seized by Boston police did not show up in registries. Will the city be able to enforce the law that requires gun owners to report a sale of a gun or a loss of one?
I mean, I think, you know, what we did there, the commissioner and myself sent a letter to all the the gun owners in Boston, letting them know of their rights and rules and regulations around guns, and that we're received pretty well by the gun owners, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to reach out to the gun owners. But also, this is just a beginning step. I mean, the president was clear today that this is just within the power of his executive order legally that he can do. What really has to happen is that the Congress has an ability, the Speaker of the House and the Senate, they have the ability to pass some real good legislation that would not take away somebody's Second Amendment rights, but also be able to create better laws to protect people. And I think that there's been a lot of bipartisan support over the years in doing some gun legislation. As a matter of fact, right after Sandy Hook, there was a United States Senator, both Republican and Democrat, that worked in a bipartisan bill. But unfortunately, politics played into it, and the bill didn't go anywhere.
Final question is, executive action can very easily be reversed by the next president, and Republicans who are running for president are promising that that will indeed happen to these executive orders. What's the future here? How much hope can you have?
I mean, I think that we can't give up hope. We got to continue to move forward. I mean, I'm the mayor of a city that had, that's had some homicides in our city of young people standing on the sidewalk innocently shot. We have people that are involved in the activity, and as mayor, I'm not going to stop and not going to pass up because of the potential that somebody's going to overturn an executive order. I'm going to continue to work as the mayor of the city of Boston, to work with a coalition of other mayors from around the country, and hopefully we can convince legislatures, if that's the case, legislatures to step up and fight for the rights of the innocent people out there getting killed by these guns.
Speaking to us from Washington, D.C., Mayor Marty Walsh, mayor of the city of Boston. Thank you.
Thank you.
For a broader look now at the gun issue, we turn to Glenn Pierce. He is a sociologist at Northeastern University who has studied gun violence and the illegal gun market. Professor Pierce, thanks a lot for joining us on Radio Boston.
Glad to be here.
So Mayor Marty Walsh, you just heard there, and he tweeted, in fact, today, Massachusetts has a strong background checks, but 70% of Boston crime guns come from other states. What is your take on his comments and the president's initiatives as they apply to the Boston area?
Well, I think he's pointing out that in Massachusetts, our laws and our regulations have reduced the ability of people who are prohibited from owning firearms to acquire them in Boston, in Massachusetts. And research we've done indicates that that's the case in states that have more stringent regulations concerning the transfer of weapons to people who are prohibited from owning them. And so that is the good news. The slightly bad news would be that people can go outside our state as well as sometimes inside our state, but outside our state and acquire firearms. But it makes it harder, and our gun deaths are lower than that of other states.
Even with the fact that, as you said and as he said, 70% of Boston guns used in crimes come from other states. So will the president's executive actions today make it any harder for people to buy guns and bring them into Massachusetts from other states?
It should. And it won't. It's not a perfect solution by any means, but it extends the ability to check on whether a person is prohibited to people who might be selling firearms over the internet. That's just becoming an increasingly larger market channel, or people who are buying guns from a business context in gun shows.
How about those who are buying guns legally? Will it make it harder for them?
No, shouldn't. They go about their business and as they would normally. They would go to a dealer and buy a gun or go to a gun show in this case, or even go online and get a background check. It's not very different than what you might expect if you are looking for a loan. Somebody's going to check on whether you're financially positioned to have that loan. It's really, think about it as doing business. It's American.
So,
we check.
So if you take a step back then, and you have studied this for a long time, what is problematic about the background check laws as they exist right now?
Well, I think there's two things in the president's announcements are interesting. One is extending it to all business-related sales of firearms. That's been a gap. The second is he is modernizing the system. So they've hired, I think it's a U.S. Digital Service, to modernize the NICS system, which is a system which will keep track of individuals who are prohibited from owning guns, along with other types of criminal-related data. And he's also advocated hiring a 230 additional NICS examiners. So what you're doing is strengthening the system that allows people to get a background check, have the check done quickly, have it done accurately. He's modernizing the system by putting policies in place to improve the quality, the comprehension, the transfer of it. It won't make it perfect, but it improves it. And the number of background checks, just with the policies that have been put into place in the recent past, have increased by 70%. So it's not perfect, but it's moving in the right direction, and it will make us a little safer.
And how arduous is that kind of a process? And maybe you can tell us this NICS, you say NICS process. How arduous is it for a state or a city or a region to set up?
Well, think of it this way. The world is becoming computerized, digitized, and states and cities are putting systems in place that keep track of this information. They're doing it at different rates, right? Few probably still have paper systems. But as you improve these systems and as they become more integrated, it becomes easier and easier to process this type of information. And part of what the president has done is said, well, at least at the federal level, let's make sure we're doing our job. And I think what's happening at the state level and perhaps at the local levels is each state is working to improve, not just for background checks, but to improve their information on the criminal justice system or on their health system. We're making movements to improve these systems that allow us to manage our work, if you will. And it's harder if you've got a federal system where you have 50 states and you have lots of different communities than it would be for somebody like Walmart's, which is a single company and, you know, a single line of command. But I think the important thing is that this is something which is moving along and will continue to improve. Federal government's attempting to do its part and improve at that level. And I think it's sort of like it's an ongoing process. It's we would expect continued improvement on all those regards, and that'll make it easier and more accurate to get these checks back. And then if you're a law-abiding citizen, you get your gun.
And for in the meantime, though, the FBI is hiring something like 230 additional staff people to speed up the process of these background checks. Under current law, a gun sale, though, can go forward if a background check is not completed within 3 days.
Right.
There is that kind of impetus and that kind of time pressure that is still consistent. So I guess the question is whether or not even the FBI extra staff being hired for this is still enough to meet the demand, frankly.
Well, it won't meet it fully, no. But, you know, just think of what you have today will be vastly improved. If you do nothing else that's happening in this world, nothing related to guns or anything, will be that much more effective 5 years from now and that much more effective 10 years from now. You know, your iPad of 10 years ago is nothing compared to the iPad of today. And that same technological movement is happening across all our systems in our society. And so, yes, the 3-day limit is a limit. The 3-day limit will be much less of a limit 5 years from now and probably practically no limit at all 10 years from now.
Professor Pierce, I want you to hang on for a minute because I'd like to turn here to Nancy Robertson. She's the executive director of Citizens for Safety. This is an organization based in Jamaica Plain that works to keep guns out of the hands of criminals and young people. Nancy, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Boston.
Yes, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What are your concerns?
Esteemed company as Professor Pierce and the mayor.
And what are your concerns? And you can weigh in on this, Professor Pierce, if you'd like to. But Nancy, what are your concerns about some of the unintended consequences of the changes that the president is proposing? Because you have a specific area of concern.
We do. And that's just based on our experience dealing with women who are losing at both ends. They're burying their children because of gun violence, and they're also exploited to buy guns for men who can't get guns themselves.
Mm-hmm. So these are straw buyers, as they're called, the women who, you say are forced
exactly.
into buying the guns for the men who can't get them.
Right. We're throwing that term out a lot, and that's exactly the definition of a straw buyer, someone who is recruited to buy guns on behalf of somebody who can't pass a criminal background check. And the
right.
best way to understand that is, I think I have to give some credit to my son now, who's in his 20s. But when I first explained it to him, he said, oh, that's the hey, mister. The hey, mister, we used to hang out outside of beer stores or liquor stores and give a guy 20 bucks. To go in and get some beer for us. And, you know, as a parent, that's more information than I wanted. But it really does capture what that definition is of a straw purchaser.
And so you think that this is going to be amped up because of the president's executive actions?
Yes, yes. So we understand, as the mayor spoke to and as Professor Pierce said, that this is just one piece in a comprehensive plan in the larger puzzle, and that the president's actions today will actually put more pressure on women to play the role of straw buyers, so that if a plan A for a man mm-hmm. who has a criminal history can't pass a background check, if his plan A was to go up to New Hampshire to a gun show and get guns, and that's no longer an option for him, we need to work to make sure that turning to his woman in his life, a girlfriend, a mother, a grandmother, a sister, that she doesn't become his plan B.
But let me ask you this.
That's the work of Lipstick.
Let me ask you both. Lipstick is the organization that you're talking about. And Professor Pierce, it is illegal to be a straw buyer or to use straw buyers right now. So isn't this more an issue of enforcement of the current laws?
Yeah, it's that, and I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, people will look always for alternatives, right? If they find one avenue blocked, they'll look for another. But I think that I think part of it is also education, and they're letting people know that this is illegal, and letting people know that this is not something that comes without potential penalties. But I think the real issue here is one of education, both of the young women, primarily the younger women, I believe, and also your dealers, because dealers can sniff this out sometimes too.
So what is the action then, Nancy Robinson, since you're on the ground on this issue, what is the mm-hmm. action that you can take to try and keep some of these young women that you're talking about from further becoming utilized in this way of buying guns for men in particular who can't buy them now and won't
right.
be able to buy them?
Right. Well, I think the professor is absolutely right. It's education. We hear often that the first time women understand that what they've done is a crime is when they get that knock on the door from law enforcement. And we know women who have lost custody of their children, who are facing 10 years in federal prison, who lost public housing, and these kinds of scenes play out every day all over the country. So first, we've got to warn them. We've got to let them know that these are the risks. This is the risk they're taking. And then we've also got to provide supports the way only women can. We've got to nurture these women, support them to make the right choice. And the best way Lipstick does that is by recruiting and working with former straw buyers who are the most authentic voices, who can talk with these women, and especially young girls, and give them, you know, act like an inoculation so that when the time comes and the boyfriend does approach them to buy a gun for them, they'll know that's not what love looks like. They'll know that they need to say no for their own welfare and for the welfare of their community.
Thank you. I'm going to let you go now. Nancy Robinson, Executive Director of Citizens for Safety. Very nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Professor Pierce, I wonder if you can tell us, I mean, Nancy there spoke about one particular aspect of one potential ramification of the president's actions. What else are you looking at? What else are you most concerned about now? Because there's a lot of ground that the president did not cover.
Right. I mean, that's true. I think that what you want to consider is if for the policies, specific policies we're looking at, they're going to have to look at how you define what being in the business of selling a gun is. And that definition...
You mean what goes along with it?
What goes along with it? What, you know, how do you define it? It's not somebody selling a gun to their family member or a friend or something like that. It's and I think they've tried to be clear about it being in the business of selling a gun, so they're not saying private sales between two individuals, but you are actually engaged in a business and making profit. And so there may be some issue at some point where that definition needs to be refined. More generally, I think that, frankly, I think if we look at the states that have been rather more successful in controlling firearm crime, that may be provide lessons for other states.
You mean like this one?
Like this one, like California, frankly, has done a pretty good job. There are a set of states that have basically managed to reduce illegal trafficking of firearms within their borders and exporting guns out of their borders, done a better job than other states. And that's something folks may want to consider. I think another thing more generally, though, is can we take this discussion out of the context of being basically the problem I see is that any sort of reasonable type of policy to control firearms crime and firearm suicide is basically characterized as a gun-grabbing policy, whereas I think many of the policies that the president has proposed and other individuals have proposed to control firearms crime basically are pretty much supported by most people. If you look at public opinion polls, and that even applies to people who are members of the NRA. The problem comes is that anytime you propose something, it's characterized as we're going to take your guns away from people who are legally have the legal right to own them, and this is not something that's going to happen in the United States.
Right, and as a side note, Springfield-based gun manufacturer Smith & Wesson's stock went up after the president's address. You probably could have predicted that based on past experience. Just a couple of minutes ago, it was trading at almost 3 points higher. That's up 11.5% for the day. We're going to leave it at that. Glenn Pierce, sociologist at Northeastern University who studied gun violence, thank you very much for talking with us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Stay with us. There is more ahead. I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is Radio Boston.